Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I am Daniel. Oh, it's been a long time since I've hosted. So how are you, Dale?
I'm all right, Daniel.
And I'm also with Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, how are you?
This is a very varied lineup for a podcast in terms of running order. A bit of games, bit of movies, you know, that's what we're all about. First up, we're going to talk about Spider-Man, Joe.
Oh, yeah. Am I allowed to talk about that? I forgot about it.
Yeah, you are.
Be prepared.
You really worried me then when you said you couldn't talk about it. I was like, what?
I just thought there was an embargo.
Andrew Goldfarb's talked about it. Now I want your take on it.
Well, I'm the wrong person to ask because I'm the only person I know apart from Gav who didn't like it as much as everyone else.
I think that's important. Not that you didn't like it.
Let's,
not as much as everyone else.
Like, I'm not just being contrarian. I loved what I played at E3. Yeah. We talked about it having played that same demo. It's still amazing. I would play 2 hours from the start of the game just to set it up. And it's amazing to swing around and control that character. And which I didn't find this out until I left. They've got like tricks, like Tony Hawk style tricks in there.
What's and the benefit to that though?
You just
look
earn
just cool. Flare. That's the thing, big thing about Spiny. He looks cool.
You earn tiny bits of experience for doing them. So that's the benefit.
Oh my God, I'm going to be tricking my way through that scene nonstop.
You're going to be platting
You better not be like grinding on the side of buildings. That's not what Spider-Man does. He doesn't just grind them.
There is a trophy attached to tricks. I'm going to be the master of tricks.
There's a trophy attached to grinding.
There will be a... my favorite trick name in it is just Spider Roll. It's like, you know how Batman puts bat in front of everything?
Yeah.
That's Spider-Man's Spider Roll.
Massive egotist, really.
Oh, unbelievable. A bat computer is just a computer.
Yeah.
Shut up, Batman. Spider-Man, though, he controls brilliantly. It's amazing to go around that city, and combat's really fun. And the more I saw of the kind of extended skill tree, the more I was like, oh wow, there's quite a lot you can do with combat and you can kind of mix it up and there's lots of combos and interesting moves.
But it's the world,
but the open world is just an Ubisoft game from 4 years ago. It's Far Cry 3.
Because speaking to you guys, it says there's like radio controls, like police control
it's,
towers.
It's literally... I can't believe they've got radio towers that unlock the map.
Like Ubisoft,
it's a joke.
But we live in a world now where Ubisoft games make fun of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The start of Far Cry 5 literally makes fun of how bad an idea that was after a while. And so
it's
you're
quite
going
a
up radio towers.
Choice.
It's mad. And that the difference between those things is because they're police controlled, that's how you hear crimes going on in the area.
Yes.
Which is the neat difference. But even those crimes are still just emergent events. It's like some guys to beat up in a shop front or a car.
Which
are
similar missions to what you did in the old Spider-Man games.
Absolutely.
Essentially.
Well, this was a favorite line that we wrote in the unofficial Spider-Man preview, which is amazing, by the way. I didn't write all of it. Gav did it. It's brilliant.
I thought you went full Batman.
Everyone asked for Spider-Man 2. And they fucking got it. And I hope they're happy because it is just an old open world game with some good swinging. Like, it's
based on what you've played.
Based on the first 2 hours.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There is every chance, maybe, that
the story stuff changes.
The story stuff will change it. But from what we've played, I played a boss battle at the start, which is beating up the Kingpin, which is like the very start of the game. Like, it sets up everything out. And it's a very dull, three-phase hit-him-three-times battle. It's, like, extremely old school.
Right.
The Shocker battle at A3, almost exactly the same. So it doesn't give me much hope that the Sinister Six are going to be, like... The thing I keep comparing it to is, how is a game coming out, made doing an open world with a superhero now, that is not copying what Arkham Knight did? Right. Arkham Knight...
What's that, 3 years
its,
old?
Yeah. Arkham Knight, for all its faults, which were mainly tank-related, had one of the most interesting ways of implementing supervillains into an open world, which is they're just around and they're stories that you follow alongside sure. your main story, yeah. getting to the point where, you know, the Man-Bat sections could just happen to you out of nowhere. It made the place feel alive and like there were actual villains stalking around and doing crazy shit. Spider-Man just feels like, I'm going here, I'm picking up a fucking backpack.
Just go through the backpack thing, because this sounds nuts to me.
So the first time you unlock a radio tower, he's like, huh, it's picking up an RFID signal. I wonder what that is. And you go over, and it's a backpack webbed to a wall. He's like, oh, it's my backpack from high school. It's webbed to this wall. I forgot I put these here. And then you find out there's 50 backpacks. What teenager gets through 50 backpacks? So how's he paying for 50 backpacks?
How old is Spider-Man in this game?
He's 20... He's been doing it for 8 years. So
he's been
20,
8 years?
I think he's 24.
He's 24 in this?
I think so.
Right.
Because I think he starts when he's 16.
Well, could be doing that maths. How long does web fluid last for as
right.
well?
Right. So yeah. this is...
It's going,
someone,
through, it's going through six backpacks a year.
Someone pointed... No, but they're all from high school. So he's six backpacks in
what?
2 years.
That's like more...
25 backpacks a year.
How many terms a year do you have in school?
My mum wouldn't get me more than one backpack a year. And I used to beg to get the backpack I wanted.
I'd be giving a Sainsbury's bag if I lost my backpack.
When I was at school, there's a backpack I really wanted. My mum wouldn't get it because she thought it was ridiculous. It was an Adidas Predator backpack. And it yeah. had like a bit of a rubberized bit on it. Pointless.
Yeah. It
means you can curve the ball better.
Yeah. Also, David Beckham's good though.
A shame I will hold for the rest of my life, and it won't let me. My friends won't let me forget is that my first day at secondary school, I came in with a briefcase,
like
a little businessman.
Basically, like the plot of The Inbetweeners.
Yeah, so. Basically, I came in thinking like I'm going to look really smart, when actually I look like a fucking dork.
Just contextualise for international. How old are you? 11?
I was 13.
13, you're going in with a briefcase?
Yeah. Yeah, good, innit?
Did you get beaten Trilby up? Next?
I've never been beaten up. No. You can't beat me up. I'm wiry.
Scott briefcase.
Because I hit you up there with my briefcase. But yeah, this is a very good point. Someone on Twitter said this. I can't remember who it was, and I'll say thank you on Twitter. They pointed out that the whole point of web fluid is that it degrades over time.
So otherwise
New York is covered in fucking... If they last 8 years... it's just this fucking like cum-strewn mess.
It's like the Upside Down in Stranger Things.
Donald Glover in Homecoming, it gets his hands webbed through to a car and he says it'll dissolve it.
Mental.
I didn't think that one through, did they?
But this is it. It's like, it's just...
25 backpacks a year.
It's just walking...
two a month.
Everything we've seen of the open world so far, and there's good story bits, and there's interesting, like, little narrative sections, and that's the stuff I'm actually really excited, where it's sort of Spider-Man trying to become Uncharted in some ways, mm-hmm. like, really propulsive, exciting
well,
things
Well, that's the
happening.
Bit they first showed at E3, yeah. when he goes through that building.
And it's everyone was like, oh, where's the open world? It's like, the open world is what... This is why they didn't show it, because as far as we've seen... It's just Ubisoft game. You're just walking to a place to pick up a thing that has an artifact that you can spin round and read. And you're like, it's just so boring.
Counterpoint, though.
Yeah.
So how required is all this stuff? Like, Gav was moaning to me about the backpack. So I was like, I'm pretty sure you don't have to do it.
If you want the new suits, you have to interact with stuff. So
to me, it just seems like a collectible. And he was talking about God of War's collectibles. And I was like, what, fucking glowing crows?
Odin's
ravens, maybe.
Everything in the backpacks... Sorry, every backpack you pick up has a little like lore artifact.
Right.
They're really crap. It's like a menu from when me and MJ went for a date.
Okay.
But also, again, it makes no sense because, one, he saved it, so isn't that sweet? But yeah, he didn't care about where he left it.
He just left it in the rain. It's not a dry place, New York.
You're an absolute romantic. Oh, where is it? Oh, no.
Surely fucking Chrysler building.
I was pissed one night web-slinging through Harlem and I just stuck it to a building.
Stuck it to Avengers Tower and fucked off. No one's cleaned a window in New York, by the way.
Manhattan is not that big either. Surely you would have cruised past it at some point and just think, there's my backpack I left over there.
But you get everyone you pick up has a token in it.
Right.
And the tokens are one of... There are several currencies, like backpack tokens, crime tokens, research token. Oh my fucking god, I haven't even talked about the research. I haven't seen
what
a single
tokens. It's like when you go do a shop at Waitrose and then they give you that little green coin. And at the end, when you're walking out Waitrose, like, am I putting this into research?
You're going out of Waitrose and you're like, do I want the spider punk suit or the spider armor suit?
I might just get a free coffee.
Yeah. So that's kind of fine because it's like, it all ties into how you get the suits, which are genuinely excellent. And I had about 4 suits within the first 2 hours. So it's really giving you stuff quickly.
And they're not just cosmetic either. They all have like special abilities.
What's cool is they all come with an ability, but you don't have to wear that suit to use that ability. So if you get...
If you want
the Spider-Man Noir suit, but you want to use the Spider-Punk ability, that's allowed, which I think is really nice. That's a smart way to do it. But this is my whole point, is everything to do with Spider-Man is brilliant. The open world is just so anemic right now. And maybe it gets better. The one bit of hope I have is that the creative director gave a talk and he said, the crimes you're fighting at the start of the game are different at the end of the game. Okay. So maybe the emergent stuff gets way bigger and way more interesting.
It'd be cool if the world reflects the main story.
Yeah.
So if they change New York by doing their stuff.
Bomb. Since,
yeah.
Ooh. Big bomb.
That's all you need.
Exactly.
Right.
But I don't want to be a dick. It's fine. It just seems fine. That's the problem.
So let's talk about a villain who's not in the game and he had a new trailer this week. Have you both watched the Venom trailer?
Yes.
Yep.
It's bonkers.
Yeah. It is mental.
I'm looking forward to watching it. I do think it's probably going to be quite rubbish.
I'm kind of into it.
So my favourite bit in it, because I didn't watch it for 2 days after it came out and then I just watched it the other day. I absolutely adore the way he says the word pancreas.
Oh, yeah.
He goes,
your pancreas.
He goes, eyes, lungs, pancreas. The animation on it is nuts.
Yeah.
I love that someone's animated that and then showing their boss going, what do you think of this? It's like, it's crazy enough to work.
It is. Well, it's the classic comic book problem of how do you make Venom talking look right? Because he's got a mouth that goes up to his ears. Yeah. Like, it makes no sense.
And then at the end, when he goes off on that guy in the convenience store, I'll eat your arms and I'll eat your face.
Who's the one he says to about something like, you'll be rolling down the street?
Yeah, this guy, he goes, I'll eat your arms.
Does he say turd?
Yeah, he goes, I'll eat your face and you'll be this armless, faceless thing rolling down the street in the wind like a turd.
I've never seen a turd roll.
Yeah, no.
IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. You ever seen a turd roll?
Also, I actually find that terrifying. Imagine in a wind, a turd flying at you.
Well, not even just...
Well, like tumbleweed.
Did you see that tweet going around recently where a guy was just walking and he just saw a lemon that was rolling forever?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. And he filmed it for like a minute.
Yeah, he's on like a slight incline and it's just a lemon rolling down the street and he's just followed it. It's mesmerizing.
Can we recut American Beauty and put that in at the end?
What a turd rolling.
Yeah. I thought it looks absolutely nuts. And the Riz Ahmed thing, like, there's a shot towards the end of that where the other symbiote character, which is a character called Riot, there's a shot where he like turns both his hands into like big axes.
In an office.
But that shot looks so ropey.
Oh, there's some bad effects in there.
There's some very good effects in there as well. But that one looks so ropey. I can't believe they put it in a trailer.
What was the film? There was a film like 2 years ago, I think a superhero film, where it was weird. Like certain scenes looked way better than other scenes. Like, I can't remember what it was.
A lot like that.
But it's just weird. Like occasionally you just see one where you're like, what team did that one? Like, why does it look so different?
That's been rushed.
It's just so weird.
Yeah, it's a very odd thing for them to be doing because Sony made that deal with Marvel and obviously it's done really well for them.
Yeah.
And yet, to be so unforthcoming about how it ties to Spider-Man, I'm sure it entirely depends whether it's a success or not.
Yeah.
And then they'll somehow kind of like fuse it.
I'm quite excited for it. Like you say, because I think it might be rubbish, but it doesn't look boring.
No.
It looks baffling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's going to have a problem, it'll be that it's confusing.
It's definitely turned around since the first trailer, which I thought looked like the most boring thing ever. I had no desire to see whatever this film was. And now at least it's like caught my interest because it looked mental.
I still like the second...
Just Venom talking. I'm just really...
I still like the second trailer more because it gives more of the Tom Hardy and Venom being two opposing things.
Yeah.
Like this one's more about them being one.
Because we are
Venom.
And he's just like, in this trailer, this is a line where it's just like, if you behave or something, you might just make it through this.
Yeah.
It's very weird him having the dialogue with himself.
It's cool. Is he doing the Venom voice? I think they've said he is.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure at first, but it feels like there's little intonations in his
maybe
voice.
Maybe he's blended it with someone else.
Yeah. I thought it was Keith David for a long time. Like, it sounds a lot like Keith David.
Well, in this new trailer, it actually looks... You know, there's a motorcycle chase.
Yes.
I watched the trailer again. It looks like he actually kind of dies in it, Tom Hardy, and Venom almost brings him back to life. Like, he looks like his body gets properly fucked up.
Oh, that bit where he's
up,
just dead inside.
And it's like reanimating.
Is that why he looks so bad when he's inside Venom?
It looks like it's hard to be Venom. It looks like when I have food poisoning and I miss Podcast 400. I had Symbiote coming out both ends.
We are food poisoning.
I'll tell you what, they weren't tumbling anywhere. They absolutely weren't. Right, let's segue out of that. Please, let's segue out of that. I'm in flashbacks. We're going to talk about some nice little games we've been playing on the Nintendo Switch.
This is my extremely irregular feature. Some games I played on Switch.
Is that your new spin-off podcast?
Yeah. Irregular features.
What you got?
Well, guys, sometimes indie games get a bad rap for being, you know, overly thoughtful and twee and, you know, just a bit like sort of like artistic for artistic's sake. So I've got one for you called The Lion's Song, which is about the struggle to create art and science in turn-of-the-century Vienna. It's an episodic narrative sort of point-and-click game about four different people in Vienna, all of whom are connected in sort of sideways ways. They don't really know each other that well. And you just play episodes from their life. And then the fourth episode sort of ties them all in together. And I think it's one of the best games of the year. I played it on two flights from like two-hour flights, so it's nice and short, and it's just like beautiful the whole time.
What are you actually doing in it?
You're just like talking and learning. Great. Like,
that sounds awful.
It's so good. So the first one,
I took my Switch out of my briefcase.
It's magic. Oh, mate, it's briefcase material. It's the ultimate briefcase game. It's so nice. It's all in sepia tones and pixel art, and it's everything everyone who doesn't like indie games hates about indie games.
I thought you were actually going to leave then.
Bad enough.
Mate, do you not want to learn what it is to compose a music track or to paint a portrait?
I know what it is to compose a music track.
Well, yeah, you compose some rock music, not like orchestra, mate. I've done that now.
Way to crush my art.
It's really hard to explain because it's that reaction immediately.
And it's called The Lion's Song.
It's beautiful, and it teaches you about turn of the century Vienna. I didn't know it was such a cool place. Gustav Klimt hanging out. You go and visit Freud at one bit. It's proper Forrest Gump.
It's kind of accurate.
It's accurate. So you're playing, I'm pretty sure you're playing fictional characters who are meeting real people. So there's a bit at the end where, obviously, the thing hanging over Austria in the early 1900s is World War I going to happen soon. So it sort of segues into that. And then the epilogue, it's not a spoiler, just reveals that, like, people you were meeting along the way were real people. Like, even very minor characters, and tells you what happened to those people in real life, which is extremely cool. But then along that way is all these miniature stories about just like struggle to make something of yourself, and it's really excellently done, like quite understated. It's never like hokey, and it's even some of them not even like happy endings. They're just, here's what happened to this person, and I think it's fantastic. Like, it's just beautiful.
What's like the core like gameplay? I'm assuming it's quite light on gameplay.
Yeah, so each one's slightly different. So the composer is just, you're sitting in a room and clicking things that give you different ideas for how to compose a track. And depending on what you choose, it gives you different rhythms and beats and stuff, and creates a facsimile of a track at the end for you.
How much like variation is there?
Not a huge amount, because she's working towards a thing she wants to make. Okay. But you have some input. It's like, it's one of those games where it's like, you're never making a decision that fundamentally changes the outcome, but you're changing elements of how you get to that outcome. There's an artist who's painting portraits. So you're choosing his subjects for him and then doing interviews with them. And the answers they give changes the finished portrait, or appears to anyway. Okay. I don't know. I haven't gone through twice, so I'm not sure. And it's stuff like that. So it gives you elements of choice and freedom, but within a constrained story, because it has to get from one place to another. It's just lovely. Like, it's the length of two films, and it feels like them. Like, okay. It's a story to be told.
How much is that roughly?
I think it's like £8.
Good. Bargain.
It's really good.
Bargain.
But if you want something that's not like that, because everyone's rolling their eyes at home, Hand of Fate 2, which I tried to sell to you and you actually rolled your eyes at as well, so that's not going to work.
Which one?
Hand of Fate 2 is a game that's really hard to describe. It is a card game.
Oh, yeah.
It's a card game in which you are playing a sort of fantasy world text adventure game that when it gets into fights turns into an Arkham-style combat game. So you're building a deck, and then that deck is made up of encounters that play out tiny text adventures, and based on the outcomes of those, you get different resources and inventory and stuff, and then if you need to have a fight, it just zooms in, and everything you've got is on your character, and you're just doing an Arkham combat fight. And then you're just battering people with swords, and it's wicked. It's very different to the Lion's Song, and it's brilliant, and it's really big. It's like £15. I've played like 10 hours and I'm still going. Like, it's massive.
So it's quite hard to wrap your head around this.
So the basic setup,
so it's a deck building game.
Yeah, so the basic setup,
well, the
is you're
first
sitting,
level of reality in it is
the
I'm
first
at
level
a table
is you're sitting at a table across from this weird hooded dude who's like sort of half making fun of you, and basically, you appear to be your character at the end of the journey it took them to get there.
Okay.
But you're telling the story of that journey through this deck of sort of tarot cards, almost. And so he puts them down. Say the most simplest is you start at one end of a set of cards, and he's turning over each card in turn.
Right, okay.
And each card is a different encounter. So it might be like you have ended up at a merchant's. You can buy stuff and sell stuff. Or you've had your shit robbed by goblins, you've got to kill them in a time limit before they take your stuff away. But the deck building aspect is every time you finish an encounter, you earn all of those cards you've played, and then you can put them in a deck to play again. So you can find the positive ones or the ones that you find most interesting. And they've all got like mini objectives to complete, so you can do them in certain ways to earn extra stuff. And then you can play those as a deck in new encounters and like in new shapes and stuff. And that's how you get through. It's really smart.
It's high concept.
It's very high concept, but it's very good. Yeah, I love it. So there you go, Hand of Fate 2.
I did watch Joe play a little bit of it, and it did seem quite interesting to me. The thing that put me off was it was all high fantasy.
Yeah, you just don't like high fantasy.
You're not into that, are you?
But the idea of it sounded really cool and
interesting. It's a cool idea.
Yeah. Like,
so it's a sequel.
It's a sequel to, basically, Hand of Fate 1 was that almost exactly the same concept, but just with way less stuff.
Yeah.
It was received
like
really well.
This is like,
yeah, and then they went, they took everyone's feedback and just went, oh, we'll just do that, but better.
Yeah.
And it's, they really, like, I played the first one, loved it, and this one's just miles ahead. It's really, really good.
Cool.
We reviewed it quite well earlier this year, but no one really heard about it. And now it's on Switch, which is how everyone's going to play
it.
It's banging.
I've got one little game to put into this roundup.
Yes.
It's another very highbrow game. Mm. It's called Pool Panic.
Oh, so good.
Have you seen Pool Panic?
So I saw a clip of it the other day, and I remember, Joe, you played it quite a while ago,
I played it
you?
2 years ago at
yeah,
Rest.
And I think we spoke, I was on the podcast when you actually spoke about it, so yeah. I do vaguely remember
so
you talking about it.
It is a pool game where all the balls are alive.
Yeah.
You play as the cue ball, and it's your intention to obviously clear the table. But the kind of the pool tables are just like weirdly overgrown like landscapes. And basically, I've only played the first world where they're all kind of like set in like various like fields and stuff. And what you're learning, so it's like done. The animation is what's cool about it. It's like it looks a bit like Rick and Morty.
Well, it's
a little bit.
It's
like,
by Adult Swim, and it looks like Adult. Well, it's published by Adult Swim, and it looks like Adult.
So
Swim.
So everything has like a crazy face and a weird personality. And what I'm learning now, I've got to the point where I'm kind of. It's introducing elements where certain balls don't like to be potted.
Yeah, it's
like
so
yellow.
Good.
Yellow balls are really coquettish, and they'll hide from you. So if you can't pot them directly.
Right.
So you've either got to like ricochet a red off them, or somehow use the environment to your advantage.
It's such
but
a good idea.
But you come near them and you just go, ooh, and they just run away.
I was going to say, everything I've seen over the shoulder of people playing this looks like there's constantly balls just screaming.
Yeah. There's like, a lot of things just scream at you.
Well, it's, like it's really funny because obviously the red balls are the most numerous. Mm. So you're like, you're just like smashing them into the holes, and they're just like idiots.
Like dazed.
I just love the idea that red balls are idiots. It's really funny.
I've got a little video of this, actually. I'll play it. So when you clear a table as the cue ball, you've got to go down like a hole.
Right.
It says like to move on. So you go down there, and what happens is you get sucked into like this time vortex that looks a little bit like when they use the Bifrost in the Marvel movies. And this is the noise the main character makes.
Yeah. Oh, it's just singing.
That's him. That's him just successfully clearing a table.
Oh, so good.
You don't hear that on snooker clubs, do you?
Ronnie O'Sullivan used to do it when he was on the old Sherbet Powder.
I thought you were saying on the underground pool circuit.
But yeah,
Rocket.
It's really good. Yeah. So I think it's on offer at the minute. It's a little discount on it, but I think it's like around 10 quid.
Yeah.
But it's a really funny
it's
game.
Such a great idea.
Do you think it's a little bit fiddly aiming with the right analog on a Switch?
I agree. I think
I don't know why that is.
I think it's on PC as well. Yeah. And like PC would obviously give you that bit more precision to do it.
It's fine because later on when you're kind of like lining up very elaborate trick shots, it's obviously the margin of error is very fine. Mm. And if your finger slips last minute, you just fuck it. So that's what's happened to me a few times.
From what I've played, there's not really like a penalty for taking a while or taking too many shots, really. Yeah, it's more like...
So essentially, it's almost like a puzzle game, really, because when you do them, if you want to replay levels, you get awarded bonuses for like how quickly you can clear the table. Right. So for some of them, it's almost like a puzzle game because you need to work out the most efficient solution
to get those coquettish yellows in.
To get the coquettish yellow in. But even for the starting levels, it's like, you've got to be fast because to get the time bonus, you got to be really fast. You got to be like the Rocket. God, I didn't know Ronnie O'Sullivan would come up so much today.
He's wicked.
Finally, it's been out in America for a month and the rest of the world, but Ant-Man and the Wasp is finally out in the UK this week, so... That's good. Go see that. No, should we talk about a little bit about that? Yeah. So you and I saw it a few weeks ago, and you and I had a great time.
I can't believe how much I liked it. I was not excited for Ant-Man and the Wasp whatsoever. Just especially after the year it's been for Marvel, this succession of like bangers in completely different ways.
Yeah, and really bombastic ones and really important, monumental ones. And this is like the one that was just kind of like sneaks out afterwards, and it has that unenviable task of going between the two Infinity War movies, and it's not Captain Marvel, which is the important one.
Yeah,
Ant-Man was kind of in that situation last time, though, wasn't it?
Yeah,
first time it just was after the Avengers, I think
they've always followed the Avengers. Yeah, yeah. It's like, but almost that plays into the weird narrative that they've got around this character that he is the, you know, literally and figuratively the small Marvel hero.
Yeah.
And like even the scale of this story, again, it's not about really saving the world. It's about...
There's barely a villain.
That's one of my favourite things about it. There's not actually a villain. Like the trailers make out that ghost character is a villain. When I spoke to the director, Peyton Reed, he talks more of it being like a caper movie.
Yeah.
Because there's multiple like just antagonistic forces.
It's people
that stops them trying to do what they want.
Wanting things in the same direction and colliding.
Yeah, so it's almost like if you go in thinking she's like a classic villain, it's not. And I think it's quite an effective solution to that villain problem.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to spend loads of time on setting up a villain that's going to be disposable. The villain they do set up kind of gets into Hank Pym's backstory a little bit. Mm-hmm. But again, the story is about family, like the original. It's not about like saving the world or even America.
Yeah.
It's just about this little family drama, really, but set across this like fantastical backdrop.
It's also that weird thing of a Marvel movie that the solution to a problem is quite literally minimizing damage. Mm. Like, it's this odd thing of you never get a moment where like everything's blown up or like massive changes are made to the environment. It's like the way they get around this is by just fucking off, like getting really small and going away.
It's quite unique action because you don't actually see playing with perspective and dimension that much in a film. Like I grew up in the heyday of the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids
movies. Of course.
But it's not actually something that's overused, really.
They do a beautiful thing with it as well because they got to the point where it's like, oh, he can now become big as well.
Yeah.
Now it's everything between those two states. So there's this brilliant, totally unnecessary scene where Ant-Man is shrunk to half size by accident. So he's basically the size of a 10-year-old and all his clothes are too big and he's just running around. And the whole joke is, it looks mad.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, it's him, like, bouncing down. Like, steps are too big for him and he's, like, climbing up car seats and stuff. And like,
sounds wicked.
It's so funny. You could chop it out and it would make literally no difference to the film. But it's so clear that the driving force of this film is enjoyment. It's not, like, get from here to here. It's just, like, let's have as much fun as we can on the way.
It's got really good pace to it. I think it's funny. And also, like, it's a proper three-hander, really. Michael Douglas, Evangeline Lilly, and Paul Rudd are all equal billing, really, in it.
And a really interesting dynamic for a lot of the film where Michael Douglas and Evangeline Lilly don't really want him there.
Yeah.
So you've got this like team working together, but one person wants to work with the other two way more than they want to work with him.
Right,
it's okay. Really weird. There's an incredible scene, like I can't really give away how it happens, but there's an incredible scene where Paul Rudd is having to pretend to be someone else. And it's just...
He's very good at being...
It's like an absolute masterclass in comic acting. Like it's... I remember just turning around to you, just being like, this is so weird.
Yeah, I think we did that a few times in that movie, just going, he's really weird.
There's this weird recurring joke that he's learning close-up magic, but everyone he meets asks him how he does the tricks.
Like, there's loads of weird stuff in
he's
it.
Like he's been under house arrest. And so he's just
spoiler territory.
Well, I'm not going to say why. It's just like I think that's established in.
Yeah,
that he's like
we know that. Because that's also what they say in Infinity War.
Yeah, and like so he's been under house arrest. So he's just finding stuff to do while he's stuck in his house. And one of them is close up magic. So he keeps doing tricks, and people keep just going like, "How did you do that?" And it's just such a weird recurring
weird
joke.
Texture. Like, it's been out in the rest of the world for like a month, but you should definitely go see it if you haven't seen it already.
It is genuinely
it's very charming. It's not mind-blowing, but yeah, it's a really good time.
But it's also not much less funny than Thor Ragnarok. I think that's more surprisingly funny, but it's a very good comedy movie.
Absolutely.
It's wicked.
Finally, Dale,
hello.
You've been exploring the universe again.
I have. After
a year off,
acid flashbacks are a killer.
It's been two years.
Good to see you back at it. How's it been going?
Yeah, it's all right.
So we should say this is No Man's Sky next.
Yes, No Man's Sky next.
So this is an update, but it's kind of effectively a relaunching.
It feels
of the game,
like it's like
kind
of? Almost like a 1.5. Okay. Well, it is actually the update is 1.5. But it's like
the universe is 0.5 bigger.
I feel like it's a step towards like what a sequel could potentially be. With that, obviously, they're not going to release a sequel, I guess. They're just constantly
iterate on this.
Yeah. I think it's wicked. I think it's such like a massive step up for that game. And I know it's a lot of people who are saying they feel like it delivers on what the original promise was. But outside of the multiplayer aspect, which is it's delivering on that, I feel like it's done things that I never would have thought about doing.
Like what?
Like base building, for example. I know that was in a previous update, but now it's truly free.
Yeah.
I never thought that was going to be in No Man's Sky. There was going to be an idea of base building. There was never going to be like freighters and like space battles and things like that. I always thought it was just about exploring the universe and you might bump into random people every now and again. And that part of it existed, but the multiplayer didn't. Now it does.
So, for someone who hasn't played the game since it came out, what is the multiplayer? Like, how does it actually manifest?
So you join each other's game from the main menu. It's pretty easy. If you've got friends that are playing it, four of you together can join one game. Or you can just randomly bump into people. So I believe in solar systems, there's like an instance of, I think it's 16 people. Do you remember what he said? I think it was capped at like, I definitely read that somewhere. It's capped at like 16 people in a solar system.
Right.
And that can potentially be in there.
Oh, so like four groups of four could all meet each other.
Well, and also you can just randomly bump into people, but it's not going to be like you're running to a planet and there's 500 people there.
Yeah,
like,
okay,
I was going to say to you, like, it must guide people slightly, because like, even if there's 15 other people in a solar system, the chances are you would never meet.
So you do the maths and you realize that.
They must be like forcing
insane.
You together.
So there's absolutely some sort of trickery going on there, because I've had at least four or five times people just randomly show up in my game.
Well, I think isn't the point that you can choose to play your game from the main menu, isn't it? Like play game.
Or
then there's
join a game.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's just spawning you into a new game, just going like, you're going to be near someone and you'll get like, it'll flash.
Yeah, it never really feels like that though. I've never like joined a game, started a game and I've been near somebody. I'm doing play my own game.
Yeah, but that's
the
point.
And then like 2 hours in, somebody just randomly
But that's
pops
someone
up.
Who's just match made into your session, I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how it's working.
So you were telling me a story the other day about a dude that... Like,
yeah,
I can tell you.
Yeah. So I've been rewatching Lost at the moment. It's a bloody great show. I love it a lot. And I was in the mood to build something and I found this little island on a planet and I thought, I'm going to build the Dharma station there, the Swan Hatch. So about 5 hours later, I finished my Swan Hatch. It took me a long time.
Are you in creative mode?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, that's just when you couldn't come into work on Monday.
Yeah, yeah. Too busy.
Building a Swan station.
So yes, I was in, like Joe said, I was in creative mode, because you can do it in survival mode, but the time it takes to gather all that resources, it would have took me like five times the amount of time. So I just went into creative mode, started a new save just because I wanted to build some stuff and like try everything. So yeah, I built the station and like, honestly, go on my Twitter feed. It's pretty impressive. I've done a really good job of recreating this thing. But anyway, out of nowhere, I'm just building it and I was putting finishing touches on it. And then I just see in the bottom left-hand corner, so-and-so has just popped into your galaxy or your solar system.
You just crash landed on it.
No, I know, but I see that, you see that happen and you think, oh, well, there's like five planets here. This planet is God knows how big. And then you realize that they can see you on a map. So what did you do when you enter someone else's solar system? You target straight for them. So within about a minute, this guy just landed his ship right next to me, got out, and then we just started emoting at each other and waving at each other. And so I was like, this thing is obviously well hidden because if you know Lost and the Swan Station, it's just a hatch in the floor and there's a secret entrance around the other side. So I sort of beckoned this guy. I was doing emotes.
It was
to try
the,
and get
it was the scale.
It was actually the scale, yeah. And I beckoned him around and then eventually he sort of found his way and he just came down into the Swan Station with me. And you can put these like message modules that like fire out messages to you, like welcome to the Swan Station. I wish I had my mic on or something, or he had his mic on at this point so I could just hear what he was thinking. And he just came for a little tour with me, just followed me all the way around the station.
I love the thing, you're like really enthused showing around it, and he's going, this is awkward. It's like when Alan Partridge goes back to that guy's house, going, this guy is mental.
Yeah. Enough, he called me a mentalist when he shot off in the ship. Going,
see ya. It's like, how do we get out of here?
Do you know that scene in Alan Partridge is based on a real event in Stuart Lee's life?
What? Yeah, it is.
He had his tattooed on his...
Not that much, but Stuart Lee went back to a fan's house after a gig and they had like a Stuart Lee shrine.
Oh my God.
That person was absolute radio presenter Christian O'Connell. He had a Stuart Lee shrine in his house.
And for all we know, the person that visited your station could have been Christian O'Connell.
Probably was.
I hope it was. I like to think it was.
I like to think it was.
Did
he ruin it? Did he change anything?
No. He couldn't. So I'd have to give him permission to edit the base.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
However, what he could do is terrain manipulate.
He's a super villain with his mind.
And at one point, I went down into my hatch, but I don't think he saw where I went. So he saw my icon go underground, but he didn't know where I went.
And he started manipulating your terrain.
I didn't know what happened. I heard some noises, and then I went back up, and I saw him there, and he just caved a massive hole into my like nicely streamlined base.
What'd you do? Batter him?
Oh, just when he went, I fixed it, didn't I?
Fuming.
Muggins here, always left to terrain manipulate.
Bloody
hell. I did
hell.
Actually out loud say, oh, for fuck's sake. And now I just spent about another hour terrain manipulating to get my
back. I also like, it's like in Father Ted, you just can't get it quite right. He's adding it, it's not leveled, it's into it. And it's just like, I'm rebuilding it somewhere else.
If you've done, just goes to a different planet.
See you later.
If you've done terrain manipulation, you'll know, man. It's exactly like that. You can't get flat surface. It's all bubbly. It's ruined now.
Oh, you'll never get that flat again.
Ruined
my land. Anyway, if you've done terrain manipulation.
What everyone wants is a terrain planer. That would be really
that
great.
That would be good, actually.
Add it.
Yeah.
Murray.
Murray, 1.6.
One last really good moment after that, though. We both went out, and I noticed that he'd got a massive freighter with him, and it was in the sky, and you could see it like Independence Day, like sort of cutting through the atmosphere slightly.
That's very cool.
And they looked incredible. And then he got off in his ship, and just as I was about to take a photo of this freighter, it just saw it zip off.
I did what?
Just go off into another galaxy somewhere.
You might never see him.
Never see him again.
What piece of shit?
It's like ships in the night. We just
like
met.
Two big space freighters in the
capital
night.
Freighters.
We met. I showed him my last station, and then he went. And it was, thought it was.
Oh, that's the war for you.
You've got to stop calling your fly your lost station.
I've named the planet Dale Lost Station. So if you want to find
Dale
it,
Dale Lost Station.
Did you? Actually, wait, no, it might be Lost the Dharma Station Dale.
Oh,
like
you've
that.
Lost that. Yeah. You won't be able to find that.
I'm
again.
Still on it, mate. I'm still on it.
Never leave.
Never leaving.
If you know anything about Lost,
genuinely, you should get to the point in the game where you get portal glyphs, and then you can tell people how
to
get to it.
My plan at the moment is to get the portal glyphs, and then I can share that online, and people can go and fuck up my lawn again. I thought it was just a great nutshell of like what this experience can be now. Just like random people bumping each other into galaxy, just sharing, like not trying to shoot each
imagine
other,
if you
but just looking at what things you've done on your planet and then just going off and exploring something else.
Imagine if you become a big thing in the community where you go, you go see old man drive his lost station. And people are like coming to visit you.
Just me
like,
with a shotgun sitting
like
there on a rocking chair.
Just on the long line. You try it. If you manipulate this, I'll manipulate you so hard.
I hope someone's right. Driver is a dickhead in your ground and you come home
in
to
the
it.
Cosmos.
You can see it from space.
Oh man.
Oh.
Absolutely. You see that someone's like made a picture of Sean Murray from, and you can see from the outside of the atmosphere.
Yeah, like a base so big, they've just made a pixel art picture of Sean Murray. It's absolutely insane.
People are mad, aren't they?
People need to get jobs. That's what I've learned.
Dale's Monday off, he's been created lost.
That is a job, mate.
Lovely, that's good. Little bit of feedback. I think you got the only two pieces.
Okay, this is from Adrian. And it's called Ving Rhames Aquaman.
Oh my God. Surprise casting.
Hi, IGN UK. Just finished listening to your Mission Impossible special. By the way, it was fantastic. I listened to it yesterday. I really liked it. And after hearing you guys discuss Ving Rhames and Aquaman in the same breath, I recalled a little-known television pilot you may be interested in. In 2007, the creators of Smallville produced the first episode of an Aquaman series in the same vein. Mr. Ving Rhames was cast as the wise old mentor role to the teenaged Arthur Curry character. The show was never picked up, but the pilot is out there on the internet and worth watching for a laugh.
We should actually, a good feature, actually, to go back and like pilots for shows that never made that you can like freely watch.
Yeah. I think there's quite a few of those features.
There's the Wonder Woman thing.
Which one's that?
They did a Wonder Woman show.
The one with the British girl.
No, it's the. What's it called? I can't remember.
What about the Captain America series where David Hasselhoff was Nick Fury?
That was a film.
That a film?
Yeah, No. We conflate.
Wait, no, that was Nick Fury.
There's a Shield movie with Hasselhoff. And then there was an Italian produced Captain America movie where the guy who plays Captain America is J.D. Salinger's son.
That's so weird.
I've watched the Shield movie though, and
I've never seen
Hasselhoff one. It's a film. Yeah,
it's a film.
Sure, it's a film.
It's a Doctor Strange movie from the '70s, I think, as well.
That is probably the most authentic version of Doctor Strange. Oh yes, just absolutely cosmic.
Everyone's off the chops in it. Yeah, I bet Ving Rhames in it. He's good at mental roles. Again, a lot of sitting down.
Yeah,
in the 100%. Back of a van.
Yeah, he's such a lazy actor.
I do remember that pilot because I used to watch Smallville actually, and then it went for a long time. Smallville
until
and then towards the end, like Aquaman did pop up because they were just like, "I'll just put everyone in it."
Until what's her name got in that sex cult? See that?
Kristen. Oh, no, Chloe.
Chloe from Smallville. She's in a crazy sex cult. Cheap. Listen to you.
Call me intrigued.
What is it, crazy sex cult?
They were called. Oh, they've got a weird name. I can't remember. But basically, it was a guy who said he was like, I don't know, God or something, and just had loads of women in a harem. And she was sort of like branding people. It was very scary and weird.
How easy is it to get away with that?
I don't think.
How do you get. I want to know how do you get that off the ground?
Yeah, I want to know.
Not from like perspective, I want to do it.
I reckon.
But like, how do you get that going?
You probably only start unless you know one person who'd join up with you. Yeah. So I reckon it's the second one that's the hardest. So you're like, I've got this one person cult. You want to get in on it?
Or if you got like mad charisma, where all through your life you're like, I can just make people do whatever I want.
But who's got that?
The terrain manipulator.
Desperately trying to find the name of this sex
cult. I can find it in a second. I've listened.
I just googled Smallville sex cult and just see what we're getting. We shouldn't do this on the work Wi-Fi, should I?
No, I listened to a podcast about it. Wait a second. Here we go. Why is weird?
Well, it's creepy. You read your email and then we'll look for it.
I don't know if it's. All right, this is an inappropriate email to read.
Oh, wait, I found it.
Okay.
It's spelled weird. It's
NXIVM.
NXIVM.
NXIVM. What are the tenets of it? Do we know?
I don't know, but it was in Albany.
You could have sex with God in Albany. Okay. Okay. Final email here is from Michael Weber. He says his middle name's Leopold.
Yes, please.
Well done. So this is a little shout out for a charity fundraiser he's doing. On the 5th of September, he's going to be playing Destiny 2 Forsaken for 24 hours straight to raise money for Macmillan Cancer Support. He says last year his granddad lost his battle with cancer. Macmillan was there to support him towards the end. And he says you can donate to his stream. He says just search Michael Plays Destiny on Just Giving to find his fundraising page. So if you'd like to donate and support Michael Leopold Weber, do that.
And also, if you can find out his sort code, you can probably take his money now that you've got all his names.
Shit.
Good luck, Michael.
Sounds awesome.
Very good work. I'd just like to let you know that NXIVM is an Albany-based multi-level marketing company that offers personal and professional development seminars through its executive success programs. It has been labelled as a pyramid scheme, a sex trafficking operation, and even a sex cult. So there you go.
Varied portfolio.
Very varied.
As expected, you said, and we are definitely not a sex cult.
I like that it's a multi-level marketing scheme. Oh yeah, the first level's branding, second one's sucking it. So I'll see you later.
On that note, see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.